And their whole community had made attributions about why they had such behaviors and why this child was so bad. As mental health professionals, we need to think very broadly, sometimes outside of our scope, to look at the broad pictures of all of these children, to understand the biological ideas and concepts that contribute to behavior, to understand the psychological, and to understand the family. And biological psychiatrists are just as guilty when they see a child with a dysfunctional family, absolutely dysfunctional family, and a 3-year-old is put on 150 milligrams of a psychostimulant, and there's never any family work, and they're never engaging in what's going on with this child. He's labeled with one diagnosis after the other, and given these medications. Human behavior is complex. The rabbis understood that. And science is starting to understand that. There are biological and genetic factors. There are psychological factors. There are social factors. There are existential factors. It is a complex story. One of the things I'm so uncomfortable with these kinds of seminars are people like myself getting up and telling you what you ought to do with your child. It's never so simple. There are no fast rules. Everybody must. And that's the problem with those self-help books that we talked about last evening. It's just more complex than that. In fact, the Rambam, if you take a look at the beginning of Hilchos Deos, actually delineates different etiology for behavior. The Rambam, and I'll just quote and paraphrase in English, describes behaviors as being those which can be, in fact, from the time of conception. And he also describes a different category of behavior, those which are character traits or just kind of inclinations. And he also describes a third category, not behavior which is related to the time of conception, not even a characteristic which is an inclination, but an attribute, a midah that someone consciously attains, or that someone is influenced by their community or by their environment. Do you hear the Rambam? There are genetic reasons for behaviors. From conception, there are characteristic inclinations, and there are things which are environmental and social, and there are those things which an individual consciously attempt to acquire as an attribute, but it's never distilled down to one formula with one idea. I want to conclude with a little story. I spent 6 months at the hospital for sick children doing neurology. And I was on the neurology unit, which was also adjacent to the neurosurgery unit. There were children that were brought there from around the world. One day, over a matter of weeks, I was working with a woman who had a child that was diagnosed with a degenerative brain syndrome. I don't know if you're familiar, there's something called Rett syndrome, Lorenzo's oil, if you've ever seen that. There are a number of demyelinating disorders, mitochondrial disorders. Let me tell you about these children. These are totally normal children when they're born. They walk appropriately, and they talk, and they toilet train, and they meet all of their milestones until around age 5 or 6. And then they start to slowly lose those milestone gains. Not easily picked up. Sometimes we see this regressive behavior, and maybe a counselor would see them, or a psychiatrist, and again try to analyze what's happening in the family. But the situation becomes progressively worse, where they start to lose all of their milestones. And eventually, in some of the disorders, it ends with the unfortunate demise of the child. So there was a woman who had such a child who was in the hospital. And she came to me and she said one day, she said, "I can't take it anymore. You know, he's lost everything. He can't talk anymore. He can't walk anymore. He can't feed himself anymore. And now he doesn't even recognize me. I walk into the room, it's like I'm not there." So I guess I got my roles mixed up there. So I took off my stethoscope and white coat and said, "Well, let's just go in the room. And why don't you just hold your son? Just hold him." So she had him in a rocking chair and she was caressing him and stroking his cheek, and she kept on calling his name. And this is a boy who didn't even look at his mother. It's like she wasn't there. She called his name, "David, David, David," and kept on caressing him. And it was going on for maybe 20 minutes or so, and just tears rolling down her eyes with this child who was totally unresponsive to her. Until there was this moment when the child locked his eyes on his mother and he said, "Mama, Mama." And I was struck because there was no biological explanation for that response of that child. There was a mama and the connection is something that transcended what us doctors and biologists and psychologists understand. For Jews, there's not only the concept of the nature and the nurture. There's not only the concept of the biological and the emotional and the environmental and the family. For the Jew, there is a third dimension of understanding human behavior and human relationships, which is the existential, the spiritual. We have a sophisticated understanding in our tradition of how to understand and accept people and of how to help people. It's interesting, very interesting, to watch as science and psychology is emerging and starting to talk about many of the things that our rich tradition and Chazal have known for so many years in terms of understanding this very delicate nature, this very delicate issue of nature versus nurture, and again from the Jewish concept, nature and nurture and the existential reality of what our relationships are all about. So should I take a few questions? Jay, should I take questions or just end it?
Yeah. Okay. We'll just do a few minutes of questions. I know the hour's a little late, but maybe we'll take 2-3 questions and then wrap up. So.
Can I see it? Yeah, it's okay. Well, in order to reach the level of the Chinese, who work more on the prevention of things than on the treatment, I like very much what you said about the Rambam, the explanation of the Rambam, about the different steps that may influence human behavior and so on. So if I understood properly, the first step would be on the time of conception. So now, one works with, no matter how advanced we are now in spirituality, it's so difficult. One works with people who believe only things their senses can grasp. So how are we to convey this kind of message, this kind of understanding that we are responsible for our mental state and our emotional state, and things start.
Yeah. It's interesting, I did a rotation actually, there was a doctor here last night, Dr. Barrett, and I did obstetrics with him. And when I was doing obstetrics, I heard there was a psychiatrist there who had left psychiatry and he became a neonatologist. So one night in the middle of the night, I went over to him and I asked him, "Why did you leave psychiatry? And why did you become a neonatologist, you know, working with infants and even in utero?" And he said, "Well, the reason I went into child psychiatry was I wanted to influence, you know, children and change the direction of behavior, but I had despair. So I saw that I had to start earlier." And that's why I became a neonatologist. And I think the encapsulated that is some truths. We know that that when a mother, for instance, carries a child, we know about the biological exposures that happen to a mother during that period of time. We know that what could be the eating and the health and the well-being and how these things can influence. And there's also suggestion, again, we don't have the kind of hard data, to look at this, but even in terms of a woman's emotional state during that period of time, there have been questions about how that will influence the child. You know, one of my heroes was Paul Steinhauer. I don't know if many of you are in the field. I was lucky to be his last resident, actually, right before he passed away. And he was a social psychologist and a social psychiatrist and a great advocate for children. And as he was watching this biological shift that was taking place in psychiatry and watching these residents who were coming in who were just, full of understanding the brain as biology, he was brilliant. He would speak to them about what was happening neuronally into the brain when the child was 1 or 2 years of age. And really there is this ultimate marriage, if you think about it in a broad sense, between the biological concept of what is happening to a child, the impact that's happening to a child neurologically when they're 1 or 2, 3 years of age, and what the attachment theorists have been talking about for years. They're not two different languages. They are two different languages, but they're describing the same phenomenon. And the basic principles, whether you understand it biologically or from attachment perspective, are that the child needs to be raised in a nurtured environment. The child needs to be raised stable. The child needs to be raised in a predictable environment where their needs are met. The attachment theorists will talk about it in their way, and the biologists will talk about it, how the neurons are laid down in the brain. But it is a marriage now that is taking place in terms of understanding how crucial early life is and what disruption means during that period of time and the trajectory that happens to these children. I'm looking at my friend from Jewish Family Children's Service. What happens to some of these children early on during that separation? What will be when they're 13 or 14 years of age when they end up coming to Sunnybrook? And you can see what, perhaps there was a biological disposition, but you can see how the family and what has happened has unraveled and had a profound impact on the trajectory of the child's life. So I don't know if I answered your question, but I said what I wanted to say.
Okay. That's,
Rabbi, how can explosive disorder be harmful?
Well, you don't want to be near somebody who's going to punch you, right? You got to run away. That was good.
It's interesting. I just learned today that Chazal was ahead of neurobiology in that they knew that frontal lobe development is finalized around the age of 20. I'm just wondering why, that one is responsible to God at the age of 20. I'm just wondering why Chazal didn't institute some ceremony marking that.
Well, again, I mean, the 13 or 20 year of age, I don't think the Chazal were saying that frontal lobe development ends at 20. But I think the rabbi, I'm sorry? He was talking about a certain kind of responsibility. I'm not sure why that's not marked. Not that anybody aware? I'm not aware of any discussion about that. You know what? I'll tell you what. We don't want another Simcha 20. Have you paid for any bar mitzvahs? We need another one when they're 20. That's the answer. Yes.
What's your comments on Dr. Phil from the lights?
Oh, Dr. Phil? I like... Listen, he's an interesting fellow. He's making a lot of money. Yeah.
Okay. We'll call it a morning and afternoon. Thank you very much. And thanks.